How communities change and adapt in areas of industrial decline is the focus of a new book by urban sociologist Alice Marr from the University of Warwick. In Industrial Ruination, Community and Place, Dr. Marr looks at Niagara Falls in Canada and the US, Newcastle upon Tyne in the UK, and Ivanova in Russia to explore the experience of urban decline and post-industrial change. We spoke to Dr. Marr to find out more about her work. Can you tell me more about the idea behind your book?
The idea behind my book was really inspired by my experience of driving through the Rust Belt of the United States and Canada, through Detroit, Michigan, Hamilton, Ontario, and Buffalo, New York, and seeing vast abandoned factories, old car plants, steelworks, chemical factories. A lot of the literature on industrial ruins tends to romanticize these sites as aesthetic and sadly beautiful. But I was interested in exploring a more sociological, critical perspective. I wondered what had happened to these places. What had happened to produce the scale of abandonment? What were the stories of the people who had worked in the factories and the communities that surrounded them? So the idea of the research was to study these abandoned landscapes and the communities that surround them in depth, to examine the longer-term social, cultural, and economic impacts of deindustrialization for communities. I wanted to see how old industrial sites relate to an uneven geography of capitalist development, where some places are developed or redeveloped and others are left behind. This relates broadly to the sociology of waste, the idea that it is very revealing to study what societies discard. There's a lot of focus in urban studies on regeneration and renewal of post-industrial transformation based on growth in the service and knowledge economy. But there are also many places, such as the places I researched, that struggle to follow post-industrial models of regeneration and which remain stigmatized and deprived. For thinking about the future of cities, particularly in current contexts of economic recession, I think it is important to think critically about these neglected places.
And you were looking at communities that depended on industry for their survival, but are now landscapes of abandoned warehouses and factories. Yet you don't call these landscapes ruins. You deliberately chose the term ruination. What do you mean by that?
I argue in my book that to see something as a ruin is already to have a perspective about that. And what I mean here is that many artists and dereliction tourists, photographers, cultural theorists see industrial ruins as these sort of romantic, adventurous sites, whereas critical urban sociologists and geographers tend to see industrial ruins as these waste products of an uneven geography of capitalist development. And also, urban planners see industrial ruins as either ripe for redevelopment or blighted for demolition. But as I came through my research, I realized that an industrial ruin is never static, it's never fixed, except perhaps in a photograph. Rather, industrial ruins are part of processes of creation and destruction, or ruination. They'll go through processes of abandonment, dereliction, reuse, demolition, reconstruction, and perhaps ruination all over again. And there's no set pattern in which they'll be located within these processes. And secondly, and very importantly, they cannot be separated from the people and places that surround them. So my main theoretical perspective in this book is to see industrial ruination as a lived process, as something that is experienced by people.
And what made you choose these three communities in particular?
Well, that's a good question. Abandoned factories and areas of industrial decline can be found all around the globe, and there are a number of different places that I could have chosen. And in fact, during the course of my research, a number of people offered their own stories from places around the world that they knew of. The issue of industrial decline resonated very widely across different people. I decided to focus on examples from classic areas of deindustrialization in the UK and North America, drawing from my own experiences of these places, the north of England and the Rust Belt of Canada and the United States. But I decided to focus on areas that had not been so widely researched. So, for example, I didn't choose Detroit or Manchester because these are iconic old industrial cities with a lot of research that's been done on them. After careful consideration of many different possibilities, many train journeys, many memories explored, I chose Newcastle-upon-Tyne in the UK with its legacy of shipbuilding, its strong sense of identity and collective memory around that history, and the sort of feeling I got from visiting that place and initial explorations. And then in the US and Canada, in this trans-border regional area of Niagara Falls, I chose this place because I had visited it and I had been really struck because it's widely known as a tourist destination, as a sort of honeymoon place, as a place with lots of casinos and amusements and, of course, the spectacular falls. But it's less well known for its chemical factories and this absolutely devastating history of environmental contamination. So I wanted to explore that story as part of the Rust Belt story. And then finally, to widen the global scope of the project and to contrast with the Anglo-American focus, and also to complicate the analysis of an uneven geography of capitalism, I chose the third case of Ivanovo in Russia, once the biggest textile city. So each of the cities I selected was associated with a different iconic heavy industry: shipbuilding in Newcastle, textiles in Ivanovo, and chemicals in Niagara Falls. My research was theoretically driven, and by doing this sort of comparative case study research, I was able to both analyze global and local dynamics across different national, political, and cultural contexts.
And can you tell me a little about how you researched the book?
The research for this book involved visiting each of the places and doing case study research, which involved a number of different research methods. I would start in each city by walking or driving around the city, the abandoned factories, taking photographs, writing notes, and talking to people about the history of the city. Then, after some research around local statistics, demographic information, some expert interviews with city councillors and academics, I would start doing interviews with community development activists, regeneration planners, former workers, trade unionists, residents, and anyone else who I could find who was connected with the sites and memories of industrial ruination. I did about 30 interviews in each city. In these interviews, I asked people questions about their experiences of change in relation to work, family, community, education, and their experience in the neighborhood and with the services that were provided, about their memories and perceptions and experiences of processes of industrial decline and ruination, and their involvement in local politics related to redevelopment and change. I spent a lot of time in libraries and archives collecting documents and photographs, and gradually I developed a more ethnographic, in-depth approach where I would spend extended periods of time with research participants in their homes, in their community centres, and accompanying them on walks or drives around the abandoned industrial sites and the surrounding residential communities.
And what conclusions did you draw from your research?
There are four main conclusions that I could summarise of my research. The first, as I mentioned, is this theoretical idea I came to of industrial ruination as a lived process. So by this I mean that deindustrialization and industrial ruins, these are not simply matters of historical record, but rather they represent complex legacies of industrial ruination, enduring lived realities for people who are occupying the in-between spaces of post-industrial change. Secondly, I came across this very compelling theme of the of what I called devastation, but also home. So many people who live in landscapes of industrial ruination in these communities have strong place attachment to their homes, to their communities, and this is all despite living amongst what people would say is devastation. And there are profound differences between stigmatized views of places from the outside, from academics or policymakers or people who don't live in these places, and from the perspectives of people who actually do live in these places and with industrial ruination. And related to this, a third conclusion was the importance of imagination for urban policy and change. So people's own imaginations as ways of thinking about possible futures, these offer very important alternatives to top-down urban planning strategies. such as the models of post-industrial transformation based on property and arts-led regeneration, which leads to the final conclusion, which is that industrial centers have diverse challenges and strengths, and that really dominant post-industrial models of transformation based on things such as arts and property-led regeneration cannot work for all cities within the context of an uneven geography of capitalist development.